It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go, a brand new month of independent, progressive, liberal broadcasting is underway. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to pick out a screen name and a password. Click on chat room and jump into the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Also, brand new at HeadOn.live, courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa, there's a new one-click subscribe function. It doesn't matter what your podcasting platform is. You can subscribe to the Horn Podcast on your favorite podcatcher app. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Podbean, Stitcher, Spreaker, it's all there. And if there's a podcast app that you use that I haven't listed, let me know, and I'll tell Brother Deacon Asa, and he'll add that just to make it all the easier. Mm-hmm. Isn't that awesome? That just makes things ever so simple. Of course, there's also the Contribute button. And the Contribute button comes in real handy for keeping independent liberal broadcasting on the air. We have thanks to send out today to our first of the month subscribers. And that would be in this particular instance for the first day of the month. Yes, indeed. That would be Peter and Rusty and Smitty in Florida. And Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. And, of course, our friend at Home Dirts in North Carolina. Thank you all, thank you one and all, as well as Joseph and Lauren, out there helping out from the far, for all I know, still frozen wastes of distant Alberta. The first day of the month is also special for another reason. There's a challenge on the first day of every month, and it helps us get the program off to a rousing start for the month, and that is Bruce's Memorial Challenge, formerly Shirley's Challenge. It's in Bruce's memory, a dear friend from Wisconsin who put up Shirley's Challenge for several years until he passed away. And our buddy Laborman, Gary, out in New Mexico, and Ralps in Wisconsin, and one other anonymous contributor put up the funds necessary to, or offer the funds necessary to do a challenge on that on the first day of every month. So if you want your money doubled, this is a great day to do that for the month of July. And so Bruce's Memorial Challenge, Shirley's Memorial Challenge is on the table. If met, it means that we doubled our fundraising for the first day of the month. And that, you know, that of course is $200. So if we can raise $200, it'll get doubled and we'll be off and running. Program note. Next week, it's surprising, but the time flies. Next week, I'm on the road, off to far Philadelphia for Netroots Nation. I'm guessing that there will probably be a goodly number of political types speaking and doing their thing there at the Philadelphia Convention Center. And so we will have programs Monday and Tuesday, on the road Wednesday, and then content Thursday and Friday. So there won't be a lot missed, but very likely, unless I can, unless I get out of here stupid early and get checked in and everything there in downtown Philly, probably no program on Wednesday next. That'll be an on-the-road day. So that takes care of the housekeeping, I think. We've got, like I said, $200 and a challenge to help us get there today. And thank you. Thank you to Laborman and Ralphs and the anonymous other sponsor of this first of the month challenge. Thank you so very much. And hopefully we will be worthy of the challenge. Let's wait and see. Okay. Or, moreover, instead of waiting, let's get it done. I don't really know where to begin. There are so many morans, and there's been so much morandity. Oh, let's start with something funny. It's a visual, so something to, you know, maybe even as you're listening to the program, unless you're driving or something. Have a run over to Twitter and look up the hashtag, or I guess you can look it up just on a browser. Look up the hashtag Unwanted Ivanka. Unwanted Ivanka. Lady B and I were giggling back and forth earlier today. It all stems from the fact that Ivanka, who I have now, I finally come up with a better nickname for her. She is Ringwraith Barbie. Let me know if I get a cowbell for that, would you? Because I saw there was footage of her over the weekend at the G20 meeting, and why she was at the G20 meeting, no one really knows. She's just the idiot pet incest princess of the President of the United States. But she tried to weasel her way into a conversation between serious people. There was a group of folks, Theresa May, not a fan, but Theresa May and the woman who is the head of the IMF, not the Impossible Missions Force, but rather the International Monetary Fund, and Emmanuel Macron, president of France, and Ivanka tried to weasel her way in and tried to speak and got the iciest glare from the head of the IMF. What is it? Christine, can't recall. And they just ignored her as if she was invisible. Or, more to the point, unwanted in the conversation because they were serious adults carrying on a serious conversation. And along the way, I looked at her with that stringy bleached blonde hair, and that needle nose of hers, and I suddenly realized she looked like the head Ringwraith, the head Nazgul, from the Lord of the Rings movies. So, Ringwraith Barbie. Kind of proud of that one. And the fact that she was so obviously unwanted in that conversation spawned the hashtag Unwanted Ivanka, and people started photoshopping her into photos where she would be obviously unwanted, like standing next to Dr. King at the rally in 1963 on the Mall, or seated, one of my favorites, seated on the Mars rover lander. Being the umpire behind the catcher as Babe Ruth hit a home run. It's a good giggle. Maybe it was Justin Trudeau. Maybe that's why she was there. Maybe she's got a little crush. Maybe I mistook. No. Okay, so Brother Deacon Asa says Justin Trudeau was in on that conversation, too. And he had the most unimpressed look on his face. I thought it was Macron. Reckon Trudeau was there, too. I don't know. The Élysée Palace, the home office of the French state, put out the video on purpose. Stephen New York says, they looked at her like the clown that she is, or as you're describing it, the Witch King of Angmar. Emphasis on the word witch. Like I said, it's just a good visual giggle to get the program going. And this, of course, is Moran Monday. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And being Moran Monday, we have many, far, far too many, perhaps, nominees. But we'll try to wade through them all. But let's do this right.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Yes, run. Don't walk, don't crawl, but run. Toward the sound of the Halcon Calliope. Over here, just a few mere steps off the Carnival Midway and the Moran Monday tent. Right here, behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, you'll find them all. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger readers, maggots, libertarians, republicans, morans all, gathered together for your entertainment and your amazement. You will not believe your ears. Yes, indeed, we've got them all. Aunts and uncles, kitties and cousins, brothers and sisters, friends and neighbors, come on up to the Moran Monday tent. Because you can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed, for only something less than 15 cents per hour of programming per day, for each and every hour of programming through the month, for a $10 a month subscriber, by Jove, it's all here and it's all free. We've never sent a bill. We've never sold a single admission ticket for this marvel of Midway entertainment. Yes. So why stand there throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a desperate attempt to win a little baby iguana? No, come on over here. Come on up. There's no better waste of your time on the Carnival Midway than the Moran Monday tent. A brief disclaimer and advisory. Please keep a hand on purses, wallets, watches, jewelry, rings, necklaces, small children, pets, cats, dogs, and yes, even little baby iguanas that will someday grow to the size of a Volkswagen and eat you, even though they're vegetarians. Because, and European-style messenger bags, too, because the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills. You'll be up to your armpits in morans. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed, indeed. Hey, where to start? I'm inclined to start here. Early nominee for Moran Monday, Casey Hunt of MSNBC, who can't... what's that, Brother Steve? If we poured water on Ivanka, I wonder if she'd melt away. Well, she hasn't been milkshaked yet, but oh well. We had some milkshaking this weekend out in Portland, Oregon. But back to Casey Hunt of KCDC. She was doing the story about Megan Rapinoe and the whole kerfuffle over the White House invite when this little moment transpired. And it's not anything that requires the hockey puck, but it has a significance. There's a dot to be drawn from this.
To the Women's World Cup semifinals. They take on England tomorrow. But Team USA's takedown of France wasn't just a victory for the women's team. It was also a personal win for co-captain Megan Rapinoe. You see, last month, Rapinoe said this when asked about visiting the White House if the U.S. women's team retained the World Cup.
Are you excited about going to the White House?
I'm not going to the White House. No, I'm not going to the White House. That's, okay. We're not going to be invited.
You're not going to be invited?
I doubt it.
That didn't sit so well with the man in the Oval Office. President Trump tweeted attacks on Rapinoe, saying that she should win before she talks. He then invited the team to the White House, win or lose. On Friday, Rapinoe said she stood by her statement. Then hours later, she led her team to victory over France, advancing the best team in the world to tomorrow's semifinal matchup against England.
Yeah, by the way, I keep thinking and then I don't. Who's on the other side of the brackets? If they can beat England, who would they then face? Brazil? I mean, I'm just guessing. In terms of, you know, great soccer teams, I don't know. I don't know. If anybody does know, you know, let me know. So, okay. But we're still not there yet. We're not to the Moran part yet. Although there has been a general, I think, misunderstanding of... most people don't understand what she said the way I understand it. She said, we're not going to the fucking White House. And then she said, we're not going to be invited. And we're not going to be, you know, she found it impossible to think that the serial rapist and mentally retarded individual who inhabits the building would want a women's soccer team to visit. Because she didn't say anything directly negative about Nitwit Nero. Just pointing that out.
This morning, Rapinoe gave her first comments about the back and forth since beating France. Here is what she said about her ability to sideline the drama and to score twice against France.
To be on this team is to understand how to deal with and withstand distraction and pressure of sort of any magnitude, whether it's large or small. So we're pretty well versed in learning to deal with the problem head on or deal with an issue head on, talk about it. And then within the group, we have a great ability to just stay together and kind of block out those distractions when the time comes.
Okay. So far, so good. Fairly straightforward news story, to the extent that it's news. But wait.
We should also note that jumping into the controversy, who else, rather than far-left freshman House Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who issued a blanket invitation to Capitol Hill to Rapinoe and the U.S. women's team?
Just had to get that in, didn't you, Casey? Far-left member of the House of Representatives. Far left. Why not say Bolshevik, Casey? Yeah, boy, I tell you what, that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she sure is far left. I mean, her 5-year tractor production plan. I tell you, I don't know. I don't know if America will be able to meet it, and probably we won't make her 5-year wheat quota either. I mean, right. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Mike in Cascadia and Steve in New York. If the women's team can beat England, they will then go on to face Sweden or the Netherlands, depending on who wins that semifinal match. Okay. So it's not Brazil. Far left. I mean, what? Can anyone assign a goddamn meaning to that phrase? Oh, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants every American to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick. Far left, man, far left. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez acknowledges that there is a global climate crisis. God damn, she's far left. Far, far left. Yeah, I know. Steve in New York says, I'll just go all the way, Casey. Pinko commie comrade Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Fucking A. So, thanks. Flavio knew, too. Netherlands or Sweden. Appreciate it. See, that's the awesomeness of the ad hoc Horn Research Committee. Thanks. Far left. Yeah. Wants people to be paid a decent wage. Far left! So, in a vacuum, it's just another moment of multimillionaire for-profit media stupidity. But of course, these things do not exist in a vacuum. Not by a long damn shot. So now we go to Texas, where Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez toured a concentration camp today. Afterwards, she saw, she discussed what she'd seen with the media. She witnessed women held in cells with no water, you know, no sinks, no spigots, and who were told to drink out of the toilets. She described it as psychological warfare against the women. And she was also told that the Customs and Border Patrol guards forced the women to get up and walk around at any and all hours arbitrarily for no particular reason. This afternoon she tweeted, "Just left the first CBP facility. I see why CBP officers were being so physically and sexually threatening toward me. Officers were keeping women in cells with no water and had told them to drink out of the toilets. This was them on their good behavior in front of members of Congress." Far left! Far left, dude! She's far left! Because she didn't... say that the goddamn concentration camps are places full of happiness and sunshine. She went on to tweet, "After I forced myself into a cell with women and began speaking to them, one of them described their treatment at the hands of officers as psychological warfare. Tell me what about this is due to lack of funding. Now I'm on my way to Clint, where the Trump administration was denying children toothpaste and soap." This has been horrifying so far. It's hard to understate the enormity of the problem. We're taking systematic cruelty with a dehumanizing culture. We're talking systematic cruelty with a dehumanizing culture that treats them like animals. And then this, as she walked into one of the concentration camps. Dude at the door.
Hey, do something about the wall, Castle, piece of shit! You piece of shit! Piece of shit, Ocasio! Do something about the border! Do your job! Do your job, Ocasio, you piece of shit! Do your job!
He's okay, stand by me. Okay.
Yeah. Piece of shit. She may be a third stage guild navigator, too, because she has managed to fold space into the head of every last goddamn maggot in this country. Far left. Piece of shit. Are they interchangeable? I don't know. Tune in to Casey Hunt. Maybe she'll start calling her a piece of shit, too. Far left! You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wants women to have appropriate child care for their babies, since most women in this country have to work outside the home. Far left! Steve in New York, Mr. Piece of Shit. Steve noting, a Christian, no doubt. Yeah. And, of course, he was wearing, just to make it easy for everybody, he's wearing his maggot hat, which is the modern-day equivalent of, well, wearing a pointy hood with a couple of eye holes poked in it. Meanwhile, Kyle with a note from down Kentucky Stanway. So let me get this straight here. Rapino said she's not going to the fucking White House, and in the same sentence said it was because the orange asshole wouldn't invite a woman's soccer team. I'm presuming that's... she said, we're not going to be invited. Then Trump responded by attacking her and inviting the team in an attempt to spite Rapino because he's a petty little pissant. Rapino again confirmed that she wouldn't go to the White House because why would she after the way the so-called president attacked her? And someone says she's the one causing the drama? God damn it, my head hurts, Kyle says. I miss the days when the type of mustard that a Kenyan Muslim wanted on his cheeseburger was a years-long scandal. Don't forget the tan suit. Jesus Christ, the earth almost wobbled off its axis over that one. Oh, he has no respect for the authority, the dignity, the honor, the office of the president. No, because he wore a tan suit. Yeah, I know. So, you know, these things, again, like I said, don't happen in a vacuum. It's the constant drumbeat of far left! That cannot help but lead to this kind. And you know what? If this dude, you know, if there hadn't been a lot of people around, who's to say that he wouldn't have, you know, attacked her? Or maybe killed her? She's right when she says that there is an atmosphere of hatred fostered against her. And yeah, sometimes the morons are funny. More often than not, they're dangerous. But she went down to those concentration camps. And didn't take no for an answer. And even then, they were nasty, hateful to her. Jesus. So that's that just sort of gets us off to a start. And so now here's a question, though, and this goes to the for-profit media aspect of this. Who wrote Far Left into Casey Hunt's script? Chances are she didn't write that. But she read it. So by reading it, is it safe to assume that she approves the words that she used? Does she go over her script before she goes on air, or is it just a cold read? Is that part of the skill set of being a member of the multimillionaire for-profit media? Ron and Raleigh with a note. Hey, Bob, Michelle had the unmitigated temerity to wear a sleeveless dress. I'm still clutching my pearls over that one. Oh, God, yeah, that just utterly destroyed the dignity of the office of the First Lady. It turned her into she might as well have taking her clothes off for money or something. Oh, wait. Yeah. Note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Christine Lagarde heads the IMF. Thank you. Yes, Trudeau was there, so as was Macron, and Ivanka looked like a hospital candy striper in whatever the hell it was she was styling. Sorry, no insult intended to the real candy stripers that actually contributed good works to this world, unlike Ivanka. Am I being too catty? Darlene asks. No, I'm sorry. Allow me to ramp it up even more. What's the deal with Ivanka's loping faux supermodel walk? And I think her fashion sense is absolutely ghastly. I'll take Melanie's over hers any day. And I never ever thought Ivanka was pretty. Sorry, boys. Well, that's the Witch King of Angmar. I mean, I'm kind of in agreement. Frankly, I think in terms of using of that style that she professes, the long stringy-haired Muppet girl singer from Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem wore it better. She's as dumb as a post and as sleazy as her father when it comes to real estate development, but she's learned from the best. The way she and Jared are portrayed in Woodward's book Fear is, well, odd at best. They're Democrats and supposedly progressive, flitting in and out with progressive ideas to Trump, who blows them off, and then Jared and Ivanka disappear into the woodwork for another 10 to 15 pages. Yeah, the Trumps are a very weird family. Jack in Shreveport says, Ivanka's walk, OMFG, that walk has been bugging me since I first saw her. Oh, well, we've tapped into another little layer of the zeitgeist. But, okay, so that brings up another thing that moraned out of the ooze of the swamp this weekend. And that is the concept of President Ivanka. Not that anybody's keeping track, I'm sure. But I was way out in front of this one too. You may recall several times over the last couple of years that I have pointed out that Julius Geezer thinks in dynastic terms. Yeah, does every president who has a kid think someday that my kid's going to be president too? A lot of people apparently believed it, at least based upon the number of clueless folks I heard back in 2015 and 2016 going, "Woo, Clinton dynasty, Clinton dynasty, Bruga, 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 Clinton dynasty." Well, here you go. And so, over the weekend, Piers Morgan, Jesus of all people, Piers Morgan kind of clapped back at someone for pointing out that again, because she lives in all their heads, it was Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez who initially clapped back at Ivanka for being at the G20 and trying to pretend that she was a serious person. This then occasioned a series of tweets from Piers Morgan, idiot, who suggested that she might someday be president of the United States. And I, in the meantime, Ruth Bengiat, who's a professor of history and Italian at NYU, and who knows her way around the history of authoritarians, fascists, and propagandists, Professor Bengiat said, "To all who laugh or cringe when I say in my public lectures and tweets that Ivanka is being groomed for 2024, Trumps know the power of optics and embedding associations in the brain, a fundamental piece, a tool of propaganda." And she was retweeting Bad Fox Graphics, who said, "Real question, why is Ivanka Trump standing in the front row with the world leaders at the G20 summit?" And Professor Bengiat explained herself, saying that she's being groomed for 2024. So I figure it's a good time to reiterate what I had previously said, and that is that Donald Trump would find no greater pleasure than having Ivanka Trump Kushner, be our first woman president. It would be the ultimate finger in the eye to everyone who ever voted for Hillary Clinton because they wanted to see a woman president. It's way, 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 way out in front of the curve here. And so Ruth Bengiat pointed that out, and then the business started with the Twitter dust-up between Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Piers Morgan. And there it was. "I bet she'll be president someday." These are not what you call accidents. It's sort of like the assault on Kamala Harris's blackness. It was coordinated. All these goddamn things are coordinated. Darlene, pointing out, and AOC will continue to say that she will fight as hard as possible for health care for that jackhole calling her names, as she would for her constituents that voted for her. That is the beauty of AOC. She trumps Ivanka every day and in every way. And in some ways, simply by being a decent human being. Because I guess it's sort of a challenge for some people. And the 4th of July in Washington, D.C. is now officially fucked up. Snafu Fubar. Because, and look, I want to be clear. I threw that word out there. I have resisted that, to use that, using that word, but I've looked all over and I can't find the right term in modern parlance for what used to be called mental retardation. Retard coming from what, Italian? I've seen it on. It means to slow. It means slow. But I'm going to continue to use that in regard to Donald Trump, because I think it is probably the best explanation for why he is how he is and why he has always been that way. Oh, who didn't potty in his pants? That's mummy's good little stable genius. Wait, that sounds more Liverpudlian than Scottish, doesn't it? You can hear Marianne McLeod saying that to him, can't you? Oh, who knows how to go to the bathroom like a big boy? That's mummy's stable genius. That's the very good brain of my little Donnie. Mm-hmm. So, because he is. This isn't dementia. He's been as stupid all of his life as he is now. And so he was babbling at the press pool today in the Oval Office and talking about how he has he's gone about ruining the 4th of July in Washington, D.C., which has been a spectacular event for decades. Like many things in the seat of our nation's capital, the seat of power, free. Lots of free museums in D.C., and yeah, the fireworks display and everything was free. Well, now, talking to the press pool, he said, and we're going to have some tanks stationed outside, so we have to put them in certain areas, but we have the brand new Sherman tanks, and we have the brand new Abram tanks. I mean, it'll still be free, but there's going to be a VIP section set aside for Trump's donors and Trump's family. You know, the imperial family. The imperial retinue. Tanks. He's been wanting a Kim Jong-un-style parade for years now, and we haven't even gotten to Kim Jong-un. God bless America. How time flies. But he's been wanting one of those dictator parades for a very long time now, and they keep putting him off because they tell him that rolling all those tanks and armored vehicles and rocket launchers and missile launchers and trucks and it would absolutely turn Pennsylvania Avenue into gravel. Probably ruin a couple of bridges across the Potomac into the bargain. But he threw a fit because he wants tanks down by the Lincoln Memorial for his 4th of July, his 4th of July celebration, where he will speak to the nation. He, our brave, heroic leader, who did not manage not to shit himself at the mere mention of the idea of having to go and serve his country in Vietnam, instead letting some other poor bastard do it for him. Because, of course, no member of the Trump family has ever served this country.
And so you get that quote, and we're going to have some tanks stationed outside. So we have to put them in certain areas, but we have the brand new Sherman tanks, and we have the brand new Abram tanks.
Now, I did a... check me on this, okay? Please. I did some searching. I know about the M1A1 Abrams? Damn things are, what, 60 tons? And wherever they're put, they're going to tear stuff up. So it'll cost God knows how much to fix them all after this. Maybe he'll have them bulldoze the Vietnam Memorial so that he doesn't have to be reminded of his own goddamn cowardice every day of his life in D.C. What did Shakespeare say? A hero dies but once, but a coward dies a thousand deaths. But it's the kind of tanks. We have the brand new Sherman tanks and we have the brand new Abram tanks. Like I said, I searched. If you can find it, please tell me. Send me a link or something. Have we revived the Sherman tank? The original Sherman tank was the workhorse of the mobile armor contingents of the United States military in the Second World War. We made oodles of them, and via lend-lease provided them to the British and the Russians, the Australians, the Kiwis. Sent them all over the world. They were singular, they were quite effective. And now old ones are parked at as memorials at National Guard armories and so forth around the country or on courthouse squares, that sort of thing. New Sherman tanks. That made some brain cells itch for me. So I searched new Sherman tanks. And unless he has just revealed some massive state secret, my search of new Sherman tanks came up first and foremost with the Wikipedia entry for the M4 Sherman, the most widely used medium tank by the United States and Western allies in World War II. M4 Sherman Tank, National World War II Museum. U.S. Army's World War II Sherman Tank. For sale, running and driving, restored Sherman M4A2E8. Restored Shermans, the Sherman tank site. Thank you, Sparky. I needed that. No Shermans in the inventory and more Abrams than we know what to do with. Yeah, thanks, Ralphs. Trump says tanks will be on display for July 4th celebration. Let me just browse this real quick, see if there's anything in here about brand new Sherman tanks. Not seeing it, no. There are hundreds of Sherman tanks stored at the Sierra Army Depot, Sparky tells me. Okay, yeah, the New York Times confirms the Sherman tank is retired. It's not in use. So, the mentally retarded president says there's going to be brand new Sherman tanks and brand new Abram tanks. And went on to say, we're building a lot of new tanks, a lot of new tanks in Lima, Ohio. In a way, this is even scarier. If it's a matter of mental retardation. Especially because it appears to have been hidden, deliberately hidden from him all his life. With a doting parent or parents telling him he was really a super genius. Oh, and by the way, Flavio reminded me. Let's see, Clarence. Bob, you're 100% correct. I'm a 20-year retired Army Air Force veteran. There are no Sherman tanks in the active inventory, just like Sparky said. Lee in New York, I can hear Trump now. The Sherman tank is old, a three now. The Abrams tank is a four. Wait, that's not Stacey Abrams, is it? That number just went down. Get it out of my sight. Put it by the SS John McCain. But in regard to business going on at the border, Flavio reminds me that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's visit to the border and the concentration camps came hours after ProPublica pushed a story about a secret Facebook group for former and current Border Patrol agents. I saw this story earlier today. This is disgusting. In which members joked about the deaths of migrants and posted sexist and threatening comments and memes about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, including pictures that were edited to show her performing oral sex. CBP officers sharing memes about dead migrants and discussing violence and sexual misconduct towards members of Congress, AOC tweeted shortly before her first facility tour. How on earth can CBP's culture be trusted to care for immigrants, refugees? She said refugees. Humanely. Among other things on that disgusting page, members of the Customs and Border Patrol joked and cracked wise about the 16-year-old Guatemalan migrant who died in May while in Border Patrol custody in Westlake, Texas. One member of the group posted a GIF of the Muppet Elmo with the quote, "Oh, well." Another one posted an image captioned, "If he dies, he dies." This is all from a Facebook group called I'm 1015. And yeah, it's got 9,500 members. And they say that the page is a forum for funny and serious discussion about work with the Customs and Border Patrol. Remember, you're never alone in this family, it says. ProPublica went so far as to link participants in some of the nastier conversations to Facebook profiles that appear to be legitimate and appear to belong to Border Patrol agents, including one who's a supervisor in El Paso, as well as an agent in Eagle Pass, Texas. And ProPublica has not managed to reach any of those members. ProPublica contacted three different spokes creeps for CBP and gave them the names of the three agents they identified. And as of this moment, I haven't seen a story saying that Customs and Border Patrol has responded to those inquiries. Daniel Martinez, a sociologist at the University of Arizona in Tucson, who's a specialist in border issues, told ProPublica, "These comments and memes are extremely troubling. They're clearly xenophobic and sexist." And he identified what, quote, "seems to be a pervasive culture of cruelty aimed at immigrants within CBP. This isn't just a few rogue agents or bad apples." And, of course, this is reflective of a history, or an extension of a history, of similar conduct by CBP. It was early 2018 when federal investigators discovered nasty racist text messages sent by Border Patrol agents in southern Arizona. They got this by searching the phone of Matthew Bowen, an agent charged with running down a Guatemalan migrant with a Ford F-150 pickup truck. The agent referred to migrants as guats, wild-ass shitbags, beaners, and subhuman, with ongoing conversation about burning migrants to death. And then the other stuff that ProPublica saw seemed to be obsessed, of course, with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Representative Veronica Escobar visiting the facility. And, one person on that page suggested that a Border Patrol agent hurl a burrito at these bitches. Another said, "Fuck the hoes. There should be no photo ops for these scum buckets." And yeah, the one purportedly showing her performing oral sex, captioned, "Lucky illegal immigrant glory hole special starring AOC." But probably most indicative of all of maggot behavior was the meme that shows Donald Trump forcing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's head toward his crotch. A Customs and Border Patrol agent posted in response to that, commented, "That's right, bitches. The masses have spoken, and today democracy won." Veronica Escobar is not impressed. She described the posts as vile and sexist. Said, "Furthermore, the comments made by Border Patrol agents toward immigrants, especially those that have lost their lives, are disgusting and show a complete disregard for human life and dignity." Joaquin Castro is head of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, and he said, "It confirms some of the worst criticisms of Customs and Border Protection. These are clearly agents who are desensitized to the point of being dangerous to migrants and their co-workers. They don't deserve to wear any uniform representing the United States of America." Then there was the member of the group who posted that horrifying photo of the man and his daughter face down in the Rio Grande and said, could this have been faked? They look so clean. I've never seen floaters like this. Could this be another edited photo? We've all seen the Dems and liberal parties do some pretty sick things. Pretty sick things. That's a pretty sick notion of what constitutes sick. Disgusting. And this is where we are. This is another part of what we can't stop. Ah. well said, Jim. A note coming in from Jim. Bob, those new Sherman tanks are made by Mattel. Trump plays with them. He has a buoyant one in his bubble bath. I would not be in the least surprised. Brother Deacon Asa says, regarding Sherman tanks, to be fair to Nostra Dumbass, he did predict that America would go back to a bygone era under his tenure. Perhaps Sherman tanks, horses, and bayonets are in fact part of the deal? You left out the steam catapults there, Brother Deacon Asa. Ugh. It's... Well, it's just America. This is who we are. This is what happens when a nation falls headlong into fascism. And see, fascism doesn't have to be a majority decision. Fascism can happen because a noisy minority were able to overcome people who suppose themselves decent but merely remain silent. Darlene with a note. Holy shit, Bob. Sherman tanks were still in use during the Vietnam War. And we all know Trump evaded the draft for Vietnam at least 5 times. Could the reference to the Sherman tank be an indication that Trump is transitioning from a pre-dementia stage to full dementia? Often, people who are suffering from dementia revert back to their earlier years, the details of which they remember with better clarity and accuracy than the more recent events. And what if indeed he is developmentally slow to begin with? It just gets worse and worse and worse. I'm telling you, we're not far from him tearing his clothes off and playing with himself in front of the cameras. hey, there's Sparky. He says, bring back Patton's Ghost Army blow-up tanks, Bob. Oh, my God. You know what? Maybe they could do that. Some inflatable tanks so that we don't have to tear up one of the prettiest green spaces in Washington, D.C. Oh, no, there's your tanks, Mr. President.
Why does that one look sagging on a little side?
Well, sir, I just need some repairs. That's it. A note coming in from Jude. Trump's delusional press conference on Saturday. I'm still reeling from what I viewed last Saturday night while observing Trump rambling in front of the entire world at his press conference. It was a mixture of insanity, illogical content, free-floating ideation, repetitive fallback mantras, and more. Moments of such blatant narcissism caught me at times as having to laugh out loud, not due to humor, but pure necessity to help readjust my own sanity level. How were you impacted by that hour and 10 minutes of the current resident of our White House, dear brother? Well, Jude, I sat there in stunned, mute amazement. Agnes and I just sort of looking at each other and making strange little forest animal noises from time to time. Whoop! Because part of all of that, I mean, how do you, the struggle with this is to sort out how to talk about it. I mean, do you say that he's an idiot? Or, as I suspect, that he has never been particularly mentally healthy the whole time, or that he was developmentally slow from the moment that he emerged from the womb? And yeah, you can laugh. And the laughter is underpinned by horror. Among other things, he was asked by the New York Times about what Vladimir Putin said about Western liberalism being obsolete. Those words were used, Western liberalism and obsolete. And this was the answer. Because this is one of the most intelligent radio audiences in the world, we know what Western liberalism means. It has nothing to do with the right-left divide. It is an attitude toward open government, open society, free speech, civil rights, that was developed primarily in Western Europe and the United States. Not to the spirochetes, though. See, that's the other thing, the spirochetes. You can't leave out the spirochetes. Jesus, that picture of Ringwraith Barbie looking at her daddy and preening for him as if she's waiting to get a little kiss. And him looking at her as if he was about to say, "You remind me of Ivanka. You were great. Oh, wait. You are Ivanka. Go use some mouthwash. I won't kiss you till you do." Western liberalism. I mean, this is out into the yard, eat dirt and run rabbits material is what this is. When cuddly, lovable, huggable, squeezable, wouldn't hurt a fly, big bad Vladdy Daddy Pooty says Western liberalism is obsolete, it means that he prefers the iron fist of the tyrant, of the dictator, and that free speech is out of fashion. That he prefers the fascist way forward. He's no lefty. He's no commie, Vlad Putin. Imagine that. Russians still refer to the Second World War as the Great Patriotic War, in which they lost millions upon millions in an effort to keep from being overwhelmed by a fascist dictatorship. Only, some 80 years later, to become a fascist dictatorship themselves. Isn't history just so ironic? But I still haven't gotten to the quote. Oh, and by the way, we are past the top of the hour, and we are goose egg for Shirley's first of the month challenge in memory of our buddy Bruce. Please don't leave this kind offer from Laborman and Ralphs and our other anonymous contributor on the table. Please don't do that. We don't need to start this month in a hole on the very first day. Plain and simple. But Donald Trump doesn't know what Western liberalism means. Because responding to the New York Times, he said, he sees what's going on, I guess, if you look at what's happening in Los Angeles, where it's so sad to look. And what's happening in San Francisco and a couple of other cities which are run by an extraordinary group of liberal people. I don't know what they're thinking. But you look at Los Angeles, when you look at San Francisco, when you look at some of the other cities, and not a lot, but you don't want it to spread. Holy jumpin' Jesus Christ. Western liberalism means Los Angeles and San Francisco. I'm surprised he didn't start talking about human feces on the streets in San Francisco, since that always gets such a rise out of the maggots. The thing is, the reason that Pootie referred to Western liberalism being obsolete is because of the rise of fascism in Western Europe, Central Europe. So-called nationalist right-wing populist parties have been on the grow in Poland, in Italy. Germany is finally recognizing that it has a right-wing fascist problem now. A neo-Nazi recently confessed to assassinating Walter Lübcke. He was pro-migrant, politician from the city of Kassel in the center of Germany. The murderer went in June 2nd and shot Herr Kassel in the head at close range. The guy who did it, 45 years old, heavily active in right-wing circles, with a long string of convictions, including an attempt to pipe bomb an asylum shelter for refugees and migrants in 1993, as well as his participation at a neo-Nazi march in Dortmund in 2009, in which he engaged in an assault. And just this past Friday, in a German criminal court, an indictment of 8 members of a neo-Nazi terror group called Revolution Chemnitz after a bunch of violent fascist neo-Nazi rallies in the eastern German city of Chemnitz. Chemnitz? I don't know what to do with the CH. Eight men between 21 and 31 deeply involved in hooligan and skinhead groups. And their next plot was an attack in Berlin that they hoped to see blamed on leftists. You know, the whole Reichstag plan all over again. And then there's Nordkreuz, Northern Cross, who have compiled a death list of prominent so-called leftist and pro-refugee individuals. There are at least 30 members of that group. That includes at least one member of the SEK, which is a German special tactical unit, kind of like a SWAT team. Nordkreuz, according to reports, had something more than 10,000 rounds of ammunition, ordered 200 body bags and quicklime, and via their law enforcement connections accessed public records and collected 25,000 addresses, which they then used for their hit list. It is this rise of fascism to which Vlad Putin refers when he says Western liberalism has become obsolete. But President Duty Brain actually thinks Putin and Duty. How about that? Actually thinks Putin is talking about those goddamn liberals in California. But that wasn't that wasn't the only whoop to the press conference. ABC News stood up and asked him about the exchange between at the pageant on Thursday between Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. Over, and the term ABC used was busing, which we all understand to be a means of correcting segregation in the wake of Brown versus Board of Education. Here's the answer. Get the hockey puck. Jesus, use two if you can.
You know, there aren't that many ways you're going to get people to schools. So this is something that's been done. In some cases, it's been done with a hammer instead of a velvet glove. And you know, that's part of it. But it is certainly a primary method of getting people to schools.
Or such other body as Congress may by law provide. You know, that old ditty about for want of a nail the shoe was lost, for want of the shoe the horse was lost, for want of a horse the king was lost. One gets the idea that that was all come up with after the fact. Because it's about watching, it's about how little things left wanting result in great calamity. Or such other body as Congress may by law provide. The Congress has had since the 1960s to provide for a body to determine presidential fitness. Whatever else Congress has been doing, and, you know, they have budgets to attend to and hearings to hold. But the 25th Amendment got ratified And they left that one lie. A body that would respond or be able to respond in the event that the President of the United States became unable to discharge the duties of his office. I guess maybe they thought they'd never really need it, because
I mean, it's pretty obvious when the front of the president's skull flies off that he's not going to be able to president anymore. Or when he clutches at his chest and keels over, you don't need a body provided for by law by Congress to see that.
Because these little assumptions have been made that we would not have a president who went stark raving mad. But by God, we're there. And the thing is, we've been there, and still Congress did not, by law, provide. Nixon, wandering the halls of the White House, whacked out of his mind on scotch and phenobarbital. Reagan, drooling into his oatmeal in the waning years of his second term. And still, Congress did not by law provide. It's a hell of a little nail that we're wanting. And it may be not a king, but a country that we lose for want of it. Little children having vile racist epithets hurled at them for having the temerity to get on a bus and ride to a school where they would have an educational chance as opposed to the deliberately underfunded, separate, and decidedly unequal schools where they were, where their educations were ghettoized. It's certainly a primary method of getting people to schools. I mean, buses. I never rode a bus myself. My parents sent me to a military school because I knew that in just a few years of military junior high school and high school, I could be, like, smarter than a general, because they told me all along how smart I was.
Recall the professor from the University of Pennsylvania who noted that Donald Trump was the dumbest goddamn student he ever had. That's a quote, including the goddamn. Says something, doesn't it? Oh, note coming in from Ralphs in regard to the to Bruce's memorial challenge today, and we're still at Goose Egg. Ralphs says, "Don't make me sick Crook on you all." And I got a picture of Crook here. I don't think you want to get sideways a Crook. Oh, which reminds me of another story. Let me do some email first. Stephen, New York, dementia onset. I seem to recall people saying similar things about Reagan when people would say he would recall him mixing up roles he'd played in movies with him serving in the Army. Well, there was that, or the time that he said that he had played a former president in a movie when he was thinking about having played a baseball player by the name of Grover Cleveland Alexander. Steve continues, "You know what, Bob? I didn't think anything could surprise or shock me anymore. Then seeing the video of the visit to Clint, the woman indicted for manslaughter when someone shot her, killing her fetus, and telling women to drink out of a toilet when they were thirsty. Steve, prepare to continue to be relentlessly shocked. Fascist dictatorships do shocking things. It is in the nature of fascism to shock the conscience, to offend the sensibilities. Because by doing so, people learn to keep their heads down in the hopes that it will not visit them. And that is how fascism works. Like I said earlier, a noisy little minority can jump in feet first, and people who remain silent empower them by the acceptance that is inherent in their silence. Clarence with a note, going back to the Border Patrol agents, the sick part is that these agents, many of them are Hispanic themselves. They try to show the white agents that they're real Americans. Once they remove those uniforms, they join the ranks of the hated and the despised. Well, there has at least been some sort of a response. Flavio points out, get a load of this. U.S. Border Patrol Chief Carla Provost called the posts completely inappropriate and argued the posts are contrary to the honor and integrity I see and expect from our agents day in and day out. That's the fancy way of saying not all Customs and Border Patrol agents. Renee in D.C. says, yes, Trump slowly slips a notch, confusing Sherman with his Tonka tiny tank, which he continues to toy around with while trying to comprehend foreign affairs, plain and simple. Plain and simple, and simply terrifying, and plainly dangerous. Steve in New York says, the worst part for me is that my mom is still a Trumpansy. I've often thought to myself that I just don't know this person anymore. You know, Steve, not to make it, maybe you never did. Or maybe people behave differently once they enter the fascist fold. Just maybe. So in talking about, you know, the challenge on the table and everything, I happened to notice a story today, and I clicked on it just because, well, we had a story last week from one of those dangerous religious maniacs howling for the head of Taylor Swift. So Taylor Swift went on social media to decry the fact that a guy named Scooter Braun, who is an agent, had purchased a recording company called Big Machine Records, which then gave him ownership of her early catalog. Now, for me, owning the early catalog of Taylor Swift is not the artistic disaster that, say, well, owning, say, the early Beatles catalog or the early Stones. Taylor Swift said, for years I asked, pleaded for a chance to own my own work Instead, I was given an opportunity to sign back up to Big Machine Records and earn one album back at a time, one for every new one I turned in. I walked away because I knew once I signed that contract, Scott Borchetta would sell the label, thereby selling me and my future. I had to make the excruciating choice to leave behind my past. Music I wrote on my bedroom floor and videos I dreamed up and paid for from the money I earned playing in bars, then clubs, then arenas, then stadiums. She went on to say that Scooter Braun had bullied her for years, including putting together a hit piece on her via Kim Kardashian, or a revenge porn music video by Kanye West, which she described as stripping my body naked. Yeah, okay. Well, Justin Bieber is apparently... What's this pop culture doing in this program? Wait a minute. Justin Bieber, whom much of the world wishes would simply be taken back to Canada and buried under a mountain of poutine, he leapt to Scooter Braun's defense... And said that that Taylor Swift crossed a line by whatever. And said in typical right-wing fashion, he's not bullying you, you're bullying him. You accusing him of bullying is bullying. And then Scooter Braun's wife got into it. Saying I've never been one in a public, and all of this is about whether or not she owns the music she made, and she doesn't. And that's, you know, there's the kind of the what clicked with me is the fact that, this program is free. We set this thing up the way we did so that the program could go out to anybody who wanted to listen to it anytime, anywhere, for free. And then we, and then, you know, the idea was to have people contribute what they could to keep it on the air so that it would stay free. There are no paywalls. There are no there's no gatekeeping going on here, and so we talk about $10 subscribers and the and 1 hour of the program being the cost of less than half of a McDonald's hash brown patty. I feel comfortable saying that this program is better for you than even less than half of a McDonald's hash brown patty. But no, you know, there's no external ownership of what goes on here. But the only way that that resembles anything approaching viability is if we keep the program going. And so the first of every month, there's a $200 challenge to get the month off to a rousing start. And here we are, halfway through the program, on the first day of July. We're still at zero. And this is not just, it's not just discouraging to me, it's discouraging to the people who put forward considerable sums of money to double $5 here, $10 there. But the underlying idea that this is not going to be some capitalist enterprise and that no titan of finance can own this and then tell people, set the rules for how people can participate, or get the program is critical. And people do seem to find value in the program. And I would never want to be a Justin Bieber or a Taylor Swift. Be unable to walk outside my door without people hollering, "Wee!" Or without having to, you know, own a house with a goddamn wall and a moat and sharks with freaking laser beams. But the so-called liberal media, except for the people who operate under circumstances of their program being owned by corporations, totters along and struggles to stay alive. Thank you. Thank you, Jack in Shreveport. Thank you so much for getting us started. And now we've only got $150 to go to meet the challenge. And by the way, I won't be talking about fundraising while I'm in Philly. I'm just going to be trying to get interviews. Maybe we'll have a front porch in Philly. Possibly. Just depends on how it all works out. So, thank you, Jack, for getting us started. 150 more and everybody's money gets doubled. Mention was made by Steve. And by the way, if you want, the lines are open. If there's something you would like to talk about, you are more than welcome so to do. 304-574-8178. That number gets, well, never mind. Or toll-free, the stress line, which is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. You're welcome to jump in that way, too, or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. In an email a little bit ago, Steve from New York mentioned the horrifying story out of course, Talabama, in which a woman has been charged by a grand jury with manslaughter because another woman shot her and killed her 5 months along fetus. Not a person, not anything that could live outside the womb. And because she's black, not a fetus that most of Alabama's going to give a tinker's damn about, had it been born. But the bullet penetrated the body of the fetus, and the victim of the shooting got charged with manslaughter. Because Alabama has some of the most insane and bizarre and twisted views of fetal personhood of any state in the nation. Now, to be fair and factual about this story, it takes place in the parking lot of a Dollar General. The two women who fought were both employees
at a nearby company, and they were both besotted, if you will, over the same man. And the woman who was 5 months pregnant started the altercation. This all takes place in a little town outside of Birmingham, not far from Birmingham, called Pleasant Grove, Alabama. The goddess of irony never stops, never sleeps. But the pregnant woman started the fight. And so, even in the most liberal of jurisdictions, she would face some considerable amount of a problem legally for having started the fight. But the question then becomes one of whether or not the other woman had a right to draw a gun and shoot her. You might be interested to know that the grand jury declined to indict the woman who shot her and her who killed her fetus. But in a moment of mad irony, found the mother to be criminally liable, chargeable. It's just an indictment. For the woman having shot her fetus. This is the bizarre Handmaid's Tale world of Talibama. The funny thing, though, is that if you were, for instance, to read the New York Times story about it, you would find that that pro-life strain is not simply a pasty-faced, doughy white folks problem. Because there are people quoted who are African-American who agree with the woman being indicted. Is there a little ray of hope in this somewhere? Well, yeah, because the district attorney may choose not to prosecute. The district attorney is the first black female prosecutor, I think, in the history of the state of Alabama. And she has pro bono, the defendant has pro bono counsel from a highfalutin law firm that wants to try to overturn some of this madness. But this is the ultimate result of the multi-billion dollar religion-fueled fetus industry. Or I should say fetus fetish industry. And it's spreading like a cancer. For all intents and purposes, these bills that keep being passed in legislatures like that of Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Ohio, these are the modern-day manifestations of that causality to the Civil War that was known as nullification. The idea that a state can simply tell the federal government to go fuck itself on the principle of states' rights. Which, by the way, remain a disturbing element of Joe Biden's ongoing defense of his
position regarding what he calls forced busing. Even that term is loaded. Because for a lot of young African-American children, getting to go to the wealthier white schools and have a fighting chance at a decent education, and a lot of them had to fight, by God. They weren't forced. When Joe Biden uses a loaded term like forced busing, what he's talking about is the white folks being forced to allow little black children into their schools. And when he says decisions need to be made locally or on the state level, that is states' rights. That's right next door to George Wallace saying, segregation yesterday, segregation today, segregation forever. There's not a whole lot of difference. With regard to the shooting in Alabama, Steve in New York points out, as I recall from the article, the woman who shot didn't even shoot at the pregnant woman. The woman who shot at the ground, and it bounced and ricocheted off the sidewalk and hit the woman in the stomach. That is one of the stories that is being, that's one version of events. It is not dispositive. It is not entirely an agreed account. All right, let's run over to the phones and check in and see what Jim's got going on. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Oh, okay. Just listening to what you have to say. First, when you mentioned the fact that women were being told to drink out of toilets in our border camp, or whatever you want to call it, our concentration lager, that's just horrible.
Yes, it is.
How the hell are we going to admonish any other nation about their human rights record?
Well, that ship has pretty much sailed, hasn't it?
I guess so. And pursuant to what Trump is doing about the S-tank, you know, he's a commander-in-chief, and he doesn't have to know every element of his inventory, but something that big and he's making it up? I mean, is too much hair dye got through that scalp of his and soaked his brain?
Jim, I know I clown around and play some on this program.
Well, hell, you have to.
But I am. I want to make sure that everybody understands that I am 100% in earnest. I'm not joking, and I wish I had the better term for it because I know this term is hurtful, and I intend no hurt. But that man is mentally retarded from birth, and we had better get it through our goddamn skulls. Because to fail to understand that is, you know, the shoe falling out of the nail and the horse's hoof.
Well, that's the state of the presidency. He's worse than any other president we probably have. Compared to him, Richard Nixon is fabulous. I mean, at least Nixon had an excuse. He was loaded on Valium and Scotch. At least he did do some good things. I can't think of any good thing that Trump has done.
I thought it was phenobarbital, but, you know,
I don't know. Hell, he probably had a whole pharmacopoeia in front of him. He could have picked and choose. I guess if you were in his shape, picture to face your own denouement, you'd probably grab anything you could, you know? Jesus. But, you know, this is just, these things are just very frightening. I mean, they go beyond any type of joke or whatever. It's really serious.
Right, and please let's understand Trump is the symptom, Jim.
Oh, I'm well aware of that.
He is not the disease. He is the symptom. The disease is the right-wing fascist impulse in this country, which has always been here, but has been largely kept in check for the most part.
It's about now.
But when he does take his clothes off and starts playing with the little Donnie on live television.
Oh, boy.
What will the fascists and the maggots do?
Oh, they'd be writhing in ecstasy.
I mean, they have to keep doubling down on their defenses of him.
Well, I mean, you saw him through his entire campaign do some of the worst things that have ever been done in a presidential campaign, right? Women and other things. And I used to talk with you about it, and I was calling you in just horror. And you said, don't you think that's going to probably get him some votes? And you were right. It did.
We're learning more about the character of this nation than we're learning about him.
We are. Exactly. That's what the point I was trying to make. Absolutely. And that son of a bitch, I don't know where he's going to lead this country or where his billions might try to lead this country. I can tell you it's the hell in the handbasket. That's for damn sure.
Well, fascists don't go away peacefully.
No, they don't. We've got World War II to tell us what happened to them and how we had to make that event occur. Oh, one more thing about nullification. In nullification, wasn't John C. Calhoun sponsoring that, and he was Jackson's vice president?
Yes, he was, and Jackson said he would happily hang him if he didn't stop.
He said higher than Haman.
Yep.
Sure did. I don't really like Old Hickory that much but because of what he did to the Indians, but I would say he knew how to issue an order and carry it out.
Well, not only that, but he the damning things about him are equal to or greater than any good he wrought. But you know, two things that I think of. One, he was committed to the idea of the American constitutional system of government. And two, even though a racist, I mean, we have to include that because the vast majority of America was at the time. He also saw the Electoral College and said, "This has got to go."
Yes, he did.
Imagine the grief we would have saved ourselves had they taken his advice at that time.
Absolutely. And we've had at least two, to be up there for God knows how long, who were put there by the Electoral College. And God, it did not do us any good.
None.
It's brought us to where we are today, not only in the White House, but also through the entire country. And the people who support that stuff. It's just like Steve said about his mother. I mean, you know, I've got a sister like that. And Bob, that's hard to reconcile. I mean, that kind of limits you to your areas of conversation, doesn't it?
It puts extreme limits on them. If there is to be any conversation at all.
Well, I'm afraid conversation is basically minimal. And it always is, well, we have to talk more often. And I would think, about what? Because I know you're going to bring something up like that.
Well, okay, that was my next question. If you don't mind, let me inquire into that just a little bit.
Sure.
Are the conversations made difficult because you call her up and say, that Trump is a son of a bitch, and away y'all go? Are you trying to talk about, say, the weather in Kuala Lumpur, and she goes off on a Make America Great Again spiel?
I'm afraid you're probably right as far as the latter part of your sentence is concerned. Yes, that's it. And I just, you know, I don't need to have the upset. And I just say, well, okay, take care, bye. And, you know, it'll be another couple months before we talk. And so it's just really kind of sad. But that's the way things are at this kind of time. You have to accept it and move on, because I'm not going to change anybody, and they're not going to change me, because I have this reputation of being an avowed leftist liberal. And people down there in Canada, South Carolina, don't care too much for it.
No.
No, they don't. They say, well, you just stay where you are. That's a kick in the rubber parts, I'll tell you that.
Well, that reminds me of another issue that I've been touching on. Do you think, Jim, there's ever a chance that South Carolina will vote for a Democratic nominee for president?
I think not. No. They've just become too involved in, the new, whatever it was that Nixon was trying to put forth, a new strategy to win the South, and those people down there are just bought and sold, and willingly so, on that particular issue of keeping Republicans in where they need to be. No, I don't think so. I can remember when South Carolina was...
So that being the case, can you offer anything helpful relative to my ongoing query down through the years now? Why do we let states that are never going to deliver their delegates for a Democratic presidential candidate persist in selecting who is viable among them in the primary process?
I really don't know, but I can quote from Nikita Khrushchev, who said, and I don't mean to be harsh or cruel when I say this, but he himself said at one time, there are certain mistakes corrected only by the grave.
And I understand his and your point, but at what point in time do we see the correction? That's why I use the word ever. Is there ever going to be a time when, it's happened in the past, but that past was back when the Southern Conservative Democrats were still part of a national party.
Well,
is there ever going to be a time when...
Bob, I can't see it. I wish I could, but I just can't foresee it. I mean, those Democrats now are Democrats in name only. I don't know why they even have the name Democrat, because they're not.
Well,
Republicans.
I mean, no, there are Democrats. No, there are Democrats across the Deep South who are the real deal. Progressives, espousing progressive ideas, but they have been rendered politically impotent via, among other things, gerrymandering and via voter suppression. Because in the South, if not the entire nation, the essential activist core of the Democratic Party is black. And I don't say that as a complaint. I say that as an acknowledgement of the people who do the hard damn work.
Well, you're right there. It is.
And so with things like the gerrymandering decision last week by the Supreme Court, you know, that bunch knew what they were doing. The only way that the only way that the Republicans can resist
is to redraw lines of
the
voting districts.
The changing the changing face of America is to make sure that there can never be any actual democracy taking place.
Well, I think that's probably the very essence of it, to be honest with you. You know, it's become so transmogrified through this process of gerrymandering and redrawing lines and trying to make it difficult for people to vote, that's their own grassroots level that they've done at all levels. That's what they've done. That's part of the new strategy. I guess Nixon envisioned that, but it's certainly proliferating. That's for damn sure. It's really tired. It's horrible. It's hurt a lot of people, Bob. It really has. It's hurt an awful lot of people. It's hurt this nation.
Well, you know, it does those states no particular good either.
No, of course it doesn't.
I mean, look at the millions upon millions of people who cannot go to the doctor even under the so-called Medicaid expansion because it was rejected by these states because the Supreme Court gave them the right to reject it.
I know, and how much of the actual population, the real population of all peoples concerned, would support such an issue that would be a threat to their own well-being? Not many. Not many at all. Unfortunately, you are aware I am aware, and only certain people are aware.
This community is aware, but there's a whole lot of America sound asleep.
I understand that. You're right. Listen, did you ever get the card FAQ?
I did. And Boss Man Wayne sent that in, I think, just last week.
Great.
Thank you very kindly.
That's okay. My emails are down, and I haven't been able to use it. I've tried to get back into that. I've gone so long there that I'm having to rebuild for a means of communication. And it's kind of, difficult. But nonetheless, I know you've got other people who wish to talk with you, and I wish you a good program and a good trip to Philadelphia, and also to have a good 4th of July and all that good stuff, and have a good month, and you take care.
All right. Thank you, Jim. You have a good evening now.
I'll do my best, and likewise to all you people who are within the sound of my voice.
Thank you, Jim. Take care.
Good night.
It's our buddy Jim calling from not too terribly far away. And now over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Monday to you, Bob. This is me, Rich, from Decatur, Georgia. And I got some NRA news for you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. How do you feel about NRA TV going the way of the dinosaurs, being extinct, you know, being shut down, closed down, put out of business, and Dana Lush losing her job over there? How you feel about all that, Bob?
Well, I didn't run naked out into the yard in gleeful celebration, Reggie, but
why you say that, Bob?
Well, I mean, because among other things, I don't expect them to stay gone.
You don't?
No, this was a result of the internal little civil war going on inside the NRA, between the NRA and its pet marketing and advertising firm. They'll find another firm. They'll find another way.
Right. I guess you're right, Bob. But speaking of media, you have Flesh Limbaugh spinning, writing and raving like 7 to 10 minutes about the Democrats being the biggest hate group ever. I don't know if he said this today on his radio talk show or last week, but it's all of their media matters, you know?
Yeah.
And speaking of the Democratic convention last week, did you think that both Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren hit it out of the ballpark concerning Joe Biden, President Donald J. Trump, and anybody else, or not?
Those first two pageants, it's too early in the process to say anybody hit anything out of the ballpark. But we do know that Kamala Harris got some folks in the soft and tender parts, because they were out there pissing and moaning the next day over the fact that she was selling T-shirts with that picture that she tweeted, "I was one of those children," the picture of her as a little girl when she was being bussed in Berkeley. And there were white-wing commentators and sick, dumb bastards who said, "Oh, yeah, this is as bad as the Willie Horton ad. Oh, my God, how dare she?" So I actually had Brett Stevens queued up as one of our morons for today, so I'm glad you brought this issue up. What a horror.
Right.
What a horror he is, this so-called never-Trumper. Well, I mean, for starters, I guess he got a Mercy Pulitzer for his work at the... And who knew there were Mercy Pulitzers? For his work at the at the Wall Street Journal, then he gets hired by the New York Times to crank out semi-racist drivel and say things like campus rape isn't such a problem, and climate change isn't a crisis, and then what he did in the last few days.
Right.
And let me see if I can find it.
Yeah.
Oh, right. He analyzed the pageants, and he said,
And whoever, well, they headlined it, a wretched start for Democrats. The party seems interested in helping everyone except the voters it needs, by Brett Stevens.
Right.
Now, this was on the this was on Friday the 28th, and it's terrible. I mean, horrible.
Like
he was mad at people for speaking Spanish.
Right.
And then went on and you know, to be an opinion writer for the New York Times and get away with writing this kind of dog whistle racist drivel, it shouldn't shock me, Reggie, but it still does. They speak Spanish.
Right.
We don't. They are not U.S. citizens or legal residents. We are. They broke the rules to get into this country. We didn't. They pay few or no taxes. We already pay most of those taxes. They willingly got themselves into debt. We're asked to write it off. And it goes on. They, the, them, us, we. And it goes on to... you know, it goes. He tries to claim that he was trying to write from the mindset of the maggots, but what he's getting at is that Democrats are not doing enough to kiss the little hairy toes of white wing America.
Right.
As if those assholes were ever going to vote for anybody but Donald Trump.
Right, like I said, I just stated to you earlier, that's what Rush Limbaugh spent like 10 minutes on, ranting and raving about Democrats being the most hateful group. I think he was referring to the Democratic Convention last week.
No, the pageants, the debates. The convention isn't for another year.
The pageant, yeah. That's a pageant, huh?
Yeah.
Like, you call them pageants. Why do you call them pageants, Bob?
Well, I mean, have you been listening to the program, Reggie?
Oh, yeah, that's right, because they're all... You call them pageants because they're not real. They're phony. They're fraudulent. They're fake.
Well, because they resemble beauty pageants more than serious political discourse.
Right. But if it were up to you yourself, Bob and Kate of the Horn and Head On Radio, how would you do an American? How would you do a political convention or pageant, so to speak?
There's conventions and there's debates, and they are not anywhere near resembling the same thing. How would I do it? The first thing that would happen is that it would have no commercial aspect whatsoever. There would be no sponsorship. There would be no breaks for ads.
Right.
Okay. It would be a serious and sober format. So-called moderators would not be allowed to ask stupid fluff questions.
Right.
Like boxers or briefs.
What does that have to do with anything?
That was a debate question back in 2008.
Right.
Or maybe it was two, no maybe I'm sorry, I take that back. Maybe it was 2004.
Right. That was, you know, right. Right, and there'll be no money involved if you did it, right? There'll be no money involved.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It would be a matter of these multimillionaire for-profit media corporations actually doing something in service to the republic, not in a shameless attempt to grift a fast buck off the republic.
Right. And they'll be shown on C-SPAN, you know, because they're, you know, they don't do commercials, you know.
Well, no, I mean, it would be made available to any and all who wanted to share it.
Right, right.
I mean, the pageants last week were run on NBC, MSNBC, and Telemundo. If for some reason or another you couldn't get those, you couldn't watch it.
Right, unless you're on the internet or something like that.
And
well, unless you got cable or something like that.
Right, there's plenty of people who have neither.
Right.
And yet we wonder why people don't vote.
Right, because they can't get access to the information in order to make up their minds about voting at all.
I mean, you know,
go ahead, Bob.
And the questions that are put forward, they're not. So many of these questions are not designed to elicit a response, a serious response to a serious question about a serious problem. They are instead designed to create saleable controversy for later use as clips. For instance, the question about, well, would you give health care to 11 million illegal aliens? And it was a raise your hand question, which meant that it foreclosed an answer. And what I would have loved to have seen would have been for one of those candidates to say, hold on a minute there, joke toad.
Right.
The it's a bullshit question. Here's my question for you. Here's my question for you, joke toad. What do you want 11 million people to do when they get sick? Just die? I seem to recall that question being posed by Ron Paul at a Republican debate some years back. And the Republican audience, when he said, just let them die in the hallways, the Republican audience cheered Chuck Todd. So you tell me, instead of asking me some bullshit question about whether or not we should just let 11 million people fucking die, you tell me why or what America should do. Because you've obviously crafted this question because later on you want to turn it into some piece of viral political gossip garbage for later use. But the real question is, what do we do about anybody in this country who needs medical care?
We can't just let them die.
That question that question was meant. The purpose of that question was to solidify Trump's base of maggot support and draw more to him. But
see them goddamn commie Democrats. They want to give free health care to them goddamn illegal immigrants. Goddamn it! I'm going to vote for Trump.
And lo and behold, that was one of the things that Brett Stevens was writing about. That's disgusting. America's going to hate that, that we want to just not let 11 million people die when they get sick. That's not America.
Right. And the stir of controversy, like you said, you know, and nobody shoots back except for a few, like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris. And one of those guys said, they don't want to use the word socialist is because they'll be afraid that they'll be called that by the GOP.
Well, they're going to be called it one way or the other.
Right.
Because that word was that word was injected into the political lexicon in one of the greatest, most howling errors of modern American politics. They're going to try it. The Republicans are going to use it anyway, but when the Democrats run out and embrace it, they make it twice as toxic.
Right.
And I'm not saying it's toxic because I'm not saying it's toxic because I think socialism is toxic. I'm saying it's toxic because of the way the for-profit media will use it. Consider how I opened this program. There's Casey Hunt sitting there at a desk talking about far-left Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Far left.
What did she? Right. What else did she say about
her? She just described her. She just described her as far left. I mean, that's the kind of talk. Ahead. That's the kind of talk that you use to get out of craptastic assholes like the serial sexual abuser Bill O'Reilly.
Right.
Oh goddamn! Far left. Yeah, that's why I use my Ted Knight voice. Far left,
because Bill O'Reilly was the Ted Knight character from Mary Tyler Moore, brought to real life.
Far left.
Right.
Wants people to be able to pay their goddamn rent and eat groceries too. Far left.
Right. Doesn't this Casey Hunt character or person or the AOC going to come right back at her? Remember?
I don't know. I don't know if AOC's clapped back at her or not. God knows. Well, she's probably not worth fighting with.
Well, right. So why can't some of these people just shut the hell up and mind their own business and stay in their lane, as LeVar Ball once said?
Well, because
instead of talking about
it's good money, Reggie.
Right. It's good money. Right. Yeah, that's right. They can't do anything without controversy, can they, Bob?
Controversy is the coin of the realm.
Right. For the for-profit media, right? You say they thrive on it.
Yeah. It's mother's milk.
They thrive on it. Yes, mother's milk. They thrive on it. Without that, they have nothing to talk about. It'll be a slow news day?
More or less.
A slow news day. It'll be a slow news day. Oh, and Bob, did you catch the loudest voice on Showtime last night?
No, I don't get Showtime.
Okay. I'm sorry to hear that, Bob. I thought you had it because I thought you would have seen it. It premiered last night.
No, I can't afford those premium channels. Hell, I can barely afford the DirecTV Now.
Right, right. So do you think those people at the pageant, at the Democratic pageant, should do better? Or is it over for them for now?
They're working inside a rigged game. Okay?
Right.
That's why they're pageants. That's why they're not debates. There's no point in counterpoint. Really, there's no real point to that format except for the fact that it draws eyeballs to screens and sells ad time. Okay? Ads on that, I think Steve from Georgia Stan pointed out Friday night, ads for those things were running $100,000 a minute.
Right. And that's reality TV for them. You might as well, turn it into a reality TV show. As Nicole Sandler
that, yes, there. Absolutely. That's exactly. They are all. The reality TV model runs modern multimedia entertainment. And make no mistake, that was not public affairs programming last week. That was entertainment.
Yes, it was. Like, like the for-profit media, as you always say, about them. They're reality TV, too, are they not? Or am I wrong about that? Are they reality TV, too? Because, they read from teleprompters. They might as well be acting, They read from teleprompters, because if they didn't have any teleprompters, they'd be screwed up, right? They'd be screwed up.
And see, the professional the professional campaign management class wants to make sure their candidates are absolutely on script at all times. That's what made it so.
Right.
That's probably what made a lot of people working for Biden have a mini stroke when he had his Jeb Bush moment Thursday night when he said, "My time's up. Sorry." Because
who does that abruptly?
Go ahead, Bob. Thank you. You don't do that in a debate, okay? You don't just quit. But he realized he realized he was digging a hole that he didn't want to be in the first place and was only getting deeper. So when he quit, but the words he used were put there by the goddess of irony. My time's up.
Right.
Sorry.
Right.
And there's a lot of people in this country who feel like those are the truest words that Joe Biden spoke that evening. His time is up. His time passed. He is from a time before TV. Okay?
He is.
I mean, he was a full-grown man when we landed a man on the moon.
Right. Some people would say so is Bernie Sanders,
Dr. Bill said today that, and he did it brilliantly because he tied it to his own campaign experience. Dr. Bill ran for the West Virginia House of Delegates back in 2016. He lost. He said, as a guy in his 70s, he said the campaign was exhausting to him. And that's just a little house district in southern West Virginia.
That's not a whole state or a whole nation.
Right.
And he said in regard to both Bernie and in regard to Biden that it's probably not a good idea, that both of their times have probably passed.
Right. Well, you think they should both just...
But he wasn't being mean about it, because one of the things that... And the podcast is up for anybody who wants to get it, and I recommend it, because he also engaged in some impeachment discussion, and I encouraged him to drill deep and give us some real granular stuff from the ratification era of the Constitution.
Right.
But he said, Bernie has changed the nature of the debate inside the Democratic Party. And I give him credit for that, too. Bernie raised issues in 2016 that Hillary was not planning on talking about through the course of the campaign. And so now we are talking about what it takes, what a person has to be able to earn in order to have something resembling a decent life in this country. We are talking about the issue of how we make sure everybody can go to the doctor when they're sick or have appropriate health care. We're talking about these things largely because of Bernie Sanders. But politics is a timeline. Politics is a continuum.
Yes, it is.
Because I think back to 2004, John Kerry was not running around making a lot of noise about health care or about lo and behold, there was Dennis Kucinich, and he was. And to the same extent that Bernie changed the conversation in 2016, Dennis Kucinich was changing it in 2004.
So that
by the time 2008 rolls around, Barack Obama is obliged to talk about these progressive issues. Progressive issues are being put forward if we can just stop shooting ourselves in the foot.
Right, and putting our feet in our mouths. Like Joe Biden almost did before he stopped himself, before he checked himself, right? Even Bernie Sanders wouldn't have slipped up like that.
My time's up. My time's up. Sorry. Yeah. Hey, Reggie, it's been good talking to you, buddy. I'm going to roll on and make some room for anybody else that wants to jump in, too, okay?
Okay, Bob, but like you said, they should get much better moderators, too, for that pageant.
Well, as long as this format continues, it will be up to the hosting medium to say who they want to have on their panel. I had no problem with Rachel being there. I had no problem with Chris Hayes being there. Chuck Todd is simply a joke, a poor joke of an attempt at journalism.
Right.
And that's all there is to it.
But do you think that they should stop arguing with each other and start working with each other? Because, interrupting each other when one person tries to speak, everybody else jumps in and, jumps in, interrupts the other people. I mean, the other person, people that you can barely hear what they're saying. You want to hear them one at a time?
Well, Andrew Yang and Marianne Williamson both complained that their mics were off. If their mics are off, then you yell at the top of your lungs, "Turn my goddamn mic on!"
Right.
And let the world know in real time that there's a scam being run.
Right. But they said that they felt that their mic was being tampered with or turned off intentionally or tampered with.
And
you think that's true? Do you think that was true, Bob?
I wouldn't be surprised if their mics were muted. When you got 10 hot mics, I mean, I know this just from our attempts to carry on a group conversation on Friday afternoon or Friday evenings, Friday on the front porch.
Right.
When you got five or six people all trying to talk at once, it's not a conversation, it's not a debate, it's not a discussion, it's chaos.
Yes. Yes. And Kamala Harris said they didn't come to hear to see a food fight. They came to see a debate or a conversation. That's what Kamala Harris said to everybody else.
That she did.
They didn't come to see a food fight. They didn't come to see a food fight. She chilled everybody out. She checked them all. Now, why can't that happen? Why can't that happen more often? Why can't people do that more often? Why couldn't the moderators do that from the beginning? Well, were they scared of these people? If Kamala Harris checked them, why couldn't everybody else do it? Why can't that be done more often, Bob? As I said before, why can't the moderators do it?
Well,
are they scared of them?
No, the moderators wanted to maintain some degree of order, and they wanted it to flow the way that the network execs wanted it to flow. Okay.
Yes, which is exactly.
To have it be somewhat non-chaotic and make sure that they make lots of money.
Right.
In a capitalist system, politics is going to be capitalized as well.
Right. But they can't control people. You know that, right? When it gets like out of hand like that, they ain't gonna be able to fully truly stop them. You know,
It's amazing. I mean, it's amazing what a mute button on a sound mixer can do.
Right? What, mute them all, or just one, or a few.
If you got two people talking, there's no reason for eight microphones to be open.
Right. So you turn off the eight microphones and leave the only two that people are using on. Right.
Right, unless you want it to be like wrestling down at the Armory, reality TV, that sort of thing. Reggie, I do have to go, though, man.
Okay.
You take care. Later, man.
No, you do too, Bob. Keep cool, man. Keep cool.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
It is not degrees down here in Decatur, Georgia, man.
All right. Later, man. Reggie calling from Decatur. Lines are open if you want to jump in. Thanks very kindly to Renee in D.C. for jumping into the fundraising for the evening. We've only got $140 now to go to finish Bruce's Memorial First of the Month Challenge, courtesy of Laborman and Ralphs and the anonymous contributor who finishes out the amount. $140 to go. That's 14 people at $10. Yay, he does math. Woo! But it's really important that we get there. It's important that we knock that down. So, thank you. Herman reminds me, boxers are briefs, it says, came during Bill Clinton's 1992 campaign for the presidency. The question was asked on MTV. Hope that was helpful. Thanks, Herman. But I could swear it showed up in the aughts. Maybe I'm wrong. And then there was there's an entire history of stupid questions asked in for-profit pageants. The UFO, Agnes pointed out something the other day. She said, I remember when everybody said, ha, 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 Dennis Kucinich said he done seen the UFO'd over to Shirley MacLaine's house. And if you've been reading the news lately, the American military is acknowledging that there has been some weird shit going on in the sky. Weird, unidentifiable flying objects. I guess my notifications are a little bit behind schedule. So that makes it we're $115. Thanks to Will in Chicago. Thank you, Will. Thank you for letting me know. Because I never would have, I'll probably get that notification sometime about 3 a.m. from, it's just weird how the system works, or doesn't, sometimes. Let me just double check. Okay, things are better than I thought. The challenge is met. I apologize. The mail's not dropping the notifications like it should. So thank you very kindly to Darlene in Connecticut. Thank you to Brian. Thank you to Will in Chicago. Thank you to Steve in New York.
Thank you to Renee. We have met the challenge. That's huge. I wouldn't have known that had Will not sent me a message asking. That's a big deal. That is huge. Sorry for the typing. Multitasking. Actually, I'm not multitasking. I'm single-tasking because I wasn't talking while I was typing. Anyway, like I said, lines are open if you want to jump into the conversation. 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And then, of course, 304-574-8178. And Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Jack with a note. Ivanka nickname. Your thoughts on videos of Ivanka attempting conversation with experts at G20 and being shunned and a nickname for her got me thinking. Trying to explain my thought process got out of hand, so I'll just blurt it out, risking offending folks. There are variations and pieces to have fun with, but I think the main nickname should be Superfluous Papilla. By now, you should be thinking about James Bond in The Man with the Golden Gun. In the film, villain Francisco Scaramanga has an identifying feature, a third nipple, a superfluous mammary. Oh, holy shit, Jack, really? A synonym for mammary is boob, and a synonym for boob is idiot. So the third wheel, or third nipple, or non-essential fool Ivanka could be called a superfluous mammary. But that's not all. Why the word papilla? Papilla has an origin from Latin, literally nipple, diminutive of papula, small protuberance. Daddy Trump is papula with his small protuberance, and you can take it from there. No, no, Jack, I think you've taken it as far as it needs to go. Honest to Jesus, I think you have. Hey, note coming in from Lady B. Enjoying the show. Interrupting you just to say that Jim is a treasure, and the fact that he continues to maintain his presence on this earth is a blessing to us all. And regarding your talk earlier about the ICE employees posting nasty stuff on social media, all I have to say is this. If you have to post nasty GIFs or memes about the suffering or death of other human beings, you're truly a broken individual. You should spend the rest of your days in therapy and work to do the Lord's work. Otherwise, may God have mercy on your wretched soul. Which kind of brings us around to another little story. So while the Customs and Border Patrol agents on a group that's got 9,500 members, and I don't know how many Border Patrol agents there are, but that's got to be a sizable percentage. While they're out there posting pictures of Donald Trump forcing Alexandria Ocasio's Cortez's head toward her, toward his crotch, there's an editorial cartoonist in New Brunswick, Canada, who's out of work. Michael DeAdder has had his contract with Brunswick News, Inc. terminated. Brunswick News, Inc. is out of St. John, New Brunswick, and they operate every daily newspaper in the province, from the Moncton Times and Transcript, the Fredericton Daily Gleaner, and the St. John Telegraph Journal. He's out of work because he was canned by J.K. Irving. J.K. Irving is the billionaire son of an industrial gazillionaire named K.C. Irving, Canadian. And they co-own, with other family members, the Irving Group conglomerate, which runs interests in lumber, shipbuilding, oil shipping, and refining, and, hydrocarbon assholes. And there is an unwritten rule. No, it's pretty much kind of written. That thou shalt not criticize Donald Trump. in a Canadian newspaper owned by the Irvings. Well, editorial cartoonists are paid to create art that reflects the politics of the times. And Michael DeAdder, on June the 26th, last Thursday, published an editorial cartoon that showed Donald Trump getting out of his golf cart, golf club in hand, golf glove on his left tiny hand, and DeAdder, being a caricaturist, gave Trump a great big head and a gloopy belly and itsy-bitsy teeny-tiny little hands. He gets out of his golf cart and looks down at the body of a man and a baby laying face down in the water. And he says, do you mind
if I play through?
It is a brilliant piece of profound political satire about a president who's more concerned with his goddamn golf game than he is with thousands of suffering human beings at our border, who are suffering specifically because of the hateful actions he himself has ordered. Out of work. I put it on my timeline and said and suggested that we retweet it until such time as it becomes impossible for Nitwit Nero not to have seen it. Jesus. Let's go over to the Skype line and check in, see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program. Yo, there you are. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yeah.
Is this... Are you talking to me?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, okay, yeah. Bob, I just wanted to know, what is the precedent behind this woman being charged for the murder of an unborn child if she didn't have a weapon or anything?
It's not a precedent. It's a statute. It is a law of the state of Alabama, Charlie, that says that a fetus, even if it's just a teeny tiny little blob of cells, is the same as a human being living on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have what's called a fetal harm law in Alabama that says that if a mother does anything that harms the fetus, she is criminally liable. They have, for instance...
What did she do to harm the fetus? That's what's got me stumped.
She started the fight.
Well, I mean, what did she do to harm the fetus? I mean...
She started the fight.
Did she have a gun?
No. She took a swing at the other woman, and she shouldn't have done it because she was pregnant. But understand, if she had been, say, injured at work and lost her baby, she would have been criminally liable under that Alabama statute. Women have been prosecuted in Alabama, Charlie, for giving birth to babies with heroin in their system. That is how... They don't give a goddamn about the mother. But boy, I tell you, that fetus is great as long as it's still in the woman, which goes to prove this is about controlling and punishing women and not... because, you know, that was going to be... And I'm not trying to be hurtful, but that was going to be a little black baby that was going to be despised by a significant percentage of the people of the state of Alabama. Not specifically... Not specifically despised, but just sort of broadly, generally despised.
So, you know, I just wonder if this is going to get into other forms of prosecution. It sounds to me like
it's already that's
totally
the thing,
innocent.
Charlie. It's already there.
Yeah.
I mean, the grand jury was in, one of the grand jurors was interviewed and said, "Well, of course we done it."
Yeah, and I'd have said to the grand juror, I'd have said, "Is your mother and your auntie the same person?" I mean, you got some dumb people in Alabama, evidently. I mean, just real dumb.
Well, hold up on the dumb, okay? I mean, I'm not criticizing you. They are brainwashed. They are a theocracy in every sense of the word. Their government is run by their religion industry. You cannot get elected Democrat or Republican, for the most part, in Alabama, without the force of the church behind you. If you're a Republican, it's the Southern Baptists and the Methodists. If you're a Democrat, it's the AME Church or the Black Baptist churches. Religion runs Alabama no less so than religion runs Iran. It's the same, only different.
I just saw a post on Facebook that said that we ought to only elect people that are going to swear their oath on the Bible and obey the Constitution. Well, the Constitution plainly says that the government shall...
There shall be no religious test for the holding of office.
Right. And I'm sitting there looking at it like, I can't believe somebody put that on the Internet.
How many million likes did it have? This is,
I don't know.
Charlie, this is a country that has next to no civic understanding whatsoever. And the saddest part of it is that the multimillionaire for-profit media does virtually nothing to remedy that.
And, you know, Donald Trump's one of the most evil people I've ever seen in my life. Even in his business dealings and all, and everybody thinks he's just... I've heard people say that God put him in office, and usually I just tweet back, not tweet, but put a comment on their Facebook post and saying, I wasn't aware that God had a voter's registration card.
Damn truth.
So... You know, this country, I don't know what's going to happen to this country.
Frightening, isn't it?
I don't know what we're going to wind up like. We'll probably wind up like Iran or something like that.
Well, that was my whole point, Charlie. Parts of this country already are. Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana, Kentucky, Missouri, Idaho, Ohio, in large part. And every now and then they'll make these lurching attempts. They'll make these lurching attempts to step back from the brink, but they're never able to fully because the goddamn game is rigged at the polling place.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not barking at you. You know that, right? These things have to be said out loud, and we have to acknowledge these realities. I mean, we are in a lawless state, okay? I don't mean you in Tennessee and me in West Virginia. We are in a state of lawlessness. We have the principal oath that the president swears is to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States and see that the laws are faithfully executed.
Yes,
when the president refuses to obey the laws themselves, he is not faithfully executing, and he is in impeachment territory.
Yeah, he's the executive branch of power, and he is supposed to execute what Congress has, what laws Congress has passed.
And I'm not eager to jump on the Nancy Pelosi is horrible bandwagon, because they've sent 157 bills, important bills, important business of the United States, things that would bring relief to American citizens and advance the what we hope will someday be the decency of this nation. 157 bills she has shepherded through the House of Representatives, and they're all laying on Mitch McConnell's desk, and they are dying. They are suffocating because he's suffocating them. So I'm not going to sit here and say that she's terrible. And I'm still willing to cut her some slack, but at some point in time, there has got to be impeachment. It's like Barbara Jordan said in that clip that I ran last week. What the House does relative to impeachment is not in any wise dependent on what the Senate does. Now, do I have a personal opinion that an impeachment case is made manifestly stronger when there is a final ruling through a court system that says unequivocally that he has failed to follow the law of the United States of America? Yes, I damn sure do. But that doesn't necessarily mean I'm certainly not dispositive on the issue. And when we get an answer to the final answer to those questions, if there is not a House impeachment committee impaneled, then I'm going to be sorely disappointed. Of course, I've been sorely disappointed a lot, Charlie.
Well, you got to remember, if you try to impeach Trump, you're impeaching, quote, God's representative.
And you know what? You got to remember that they're going to that the maggots will probably pick up their guns.
Good. I hadn't been target practicing in a long time. You want to have it out? Well, we'll have it out.
Well, but remember, they're cowards. So they're not going to engage in, some sort of Napoleonic shoot across the field at each other warfare, or even a ten paces duel with flintlock pistols. They lay in ambush. That's why they murder children in schools and kill people in movie theaters in the dark. They're cowards.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I can't understand. I mean, people just have not sat back and looked at what they're doing to this country. We've got a bunch over here right across the street from where I live is the Pentecostals of Morristown. And I'd love to slip in there one time and see what goes on.
Don't, unless you know you can slip out in an even bigger hurry. Don't do it, Charlie. Don't do it. I like hearing from you. Them's crazy people.
Yeah, I know.
Good hearing from you, Charlie. You doing all right?
Okay. Yeah, pretty good. I've got a blood clot in my right side, and I've got, they sent one of the insurance claims they messed up on the information on the insurance claim, and it's about $730, and I don't know who's going to wind up paying that. I called the people that are supposed to file the insurance today, and they said that they would resend it with the correct information, but we'll see.
Jesus. Good luck, man. Good luck. Get well, all right? Don't fool with that.
Okie doke.
All right. Take care, Charlie.
Catch you later.
Later. Bye.
Bye
now. It's our buddy, Charlie, calling from far east Tennessee. I know exactly where Morristown is. Agnes and I spent the night there, last December, on our way home from Malloy Palooza number one. Jim sent a note to say thank you to Lady B. And I've got another note from her here. Don't get me started on the media. There were lots of moments I can point to when the media started going downhill, not the least of which when both the local and national media all started ending the news with a kicker. Maybe they didn't want to end the newscast with the viewer being depressed, but maybe they should have left it that way. Maybe then folks would take democracy more seriously. Frankly, the news should be the news, and entertainment should be entertainment. But now, and you know what, that used to kind of be the case,
But when ABC sort of broke that barrier when they put Rune Arledge, who had driven Wide World of Sports and the ABC Sports Department to prominence in charge of the news division. Yeah. Frankly, the news should be the news and entertainment should be entertainment. But now in the era of Trump, there's no distinction. It's entertaining for the dumb to watch Trump talk back to others, joke about a woman's appearance, and call our allies sissies. It's the man sticking it to the man. Fuck all the rules of diplomacy and decorum. Wait, what do you mean the rest of the world doesn't think like Americans do? There's the problem right there. Anyway, you and I are both running short on time. But keep kicking the tires and lighting the fires, Bob. You're making us all smarter every day. Knowledge is power. Thank you, Lady B. Knowledge is power, and we're going to need as much as we can get to fight this insult to everything human out of office and into the insane asylum where he belongs. Amen, amen, amen. Jack in Shreveport says, Charlie hasn't been listening to Washington Journal. Jesus effing Christ. Washington Journal has been depressing to listen to in the past few days that I've tuned in. People sound so misinformed that it's hard to tell if they're not just paid callers. In fact, many of them sound so coherent and organized in their thoughts that it's hard to believe they could simultaneously have the views they do. Working from a script. Brother Deacon Asa says in regard to the harming a fetus law in Alabama, you know, Bob, at this pace, it won't be long before Margaret Atwood can sue the entire American South for copyright infringement. Isn't that just the damn truth? So, here we are. Do I have a kicker? Do I have a ha-ha-ha happy talk story for the end of the program? Or shall we just conclude this by engaging in a mass shriek and have done? Oh, and yeah, North Korea. The fuck was that? That was a man who wanted to be first at something, even if he was the first American president to set foot in a country where the tyrant is the word death itself. Set foot in a country that, you know, murdered an American citizen. The Warmbier family doesn't appear to be particularly thrilled with Donald Trump right now, for good reason. And then to put out an obvious lie and say that Barack Obama wanted a meeting with Kim Jong-un so bad, but I got it. What kind of sick neuropathology is at work? And we come back around to that question. To make a person just do that. Oh, and because Moran Monday, Tucker Carlson. Jesus Christ. What I said earlier talking with Reggie, I think it was Reggie. Or maybe it was Jim. That the problem with being a maggot is that he continues to force you to double down in displays of your lick spittle obeisance. And so we had Tucker Carlson responding, defending. Trump's what do you even call it? His man crush. On Kim Jong-un. I mean, Jesus Christ, this is disgusting. Oh, by the way, along the way, Tucker Carlson has referred to Cory Booker as one of the whitest candidates among the 2020 Democrats. Really? Mighty white of you? We're going to go there? Fox sent and the White House invited Tucker Carlson along for his little date with Kim Jong-un. Describing it, Carlson said, and remember, he's the biggest purveyor of white supremacy on a nation on a network that is awash in the filth. He said, there's no defending the North Korean regime, which is a monstrous regime. It's the last really Stalinist regime in the whole world. It's a disgusting place, obviously. So once he says there's no defending, he's going to start defending. Because the following is, on the other hand, you've got to be honest about what it means to lead a country. It means killing people. Yeah. Not on the scale the North Koreans do, but a lot of countries commit atrocities, including a number that we're closely allied with. I do think that's how the president sees it. He's far less sentimental about this stuff. Less sentimental? How about more homicidal? More maniacal? How about that? To lead a country, you got to kill a lot of people. You got to kill people. And then the new, and along the way, it turns out that the serial liar who has replaced Sarah Hasselbeck Sandbags got into a brawl with North Koreans. These people. Carlson, on the other hand, went ahead. Tucker said, defending Trump, it's a choice most of the time between the bad people and the worst people. Well, okay. God almighty. Fascists defending fascists. Oh, well. Jim noting the American Gulag Archipelago. Can you imagine standing there shaking hands with a man who ordered his own staff to be... And, wow, if there's an afterlife, those murdered staffers are going, fuck! We got killed, and Oh, Jesus! When you lead a country, you got to kill people. I guess that applies to the President of the United States, too. You've got to be honest about what it means to lead a country. It means killing people. And yet, for some reason, Marianne Williamson, who says that maybe we'd be better off if we practiced more love and less hate, she's the funny one. She's crazy. A lot of countries commit atrocities, including a number we're closely allied with. Well, you know, the Congress of the United States, Republicans included, tried to stop being so closely allied with Mohammed bin Bonesaw. But Donald Trump said their money was worth more than an American resident that they chopped up possibly alive. Dismembered. Oh, well, you got to kill some people if you want to run a country. Fuck. Well, that's it. I think we got our fill of morons this evening, did we not? And thanks, everybody, for meeting Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you so very kindly. Thank you kindly indeed. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks in the chat room this evening to Sparky, who also, by the way, folded space to become Redwood Sparky in addition to Man Cave, because it was nice out under the redwood tree today. Little redwood shade, little vape, little slice of heaven. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, there's a one-stop shop for all of your podcasting needs at headon.live, brand new. Just trying to make it easier to get the program. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.